Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You hang up being there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he would come.
I was talking to a cat the other night. He said, what everybody's looking for today? What everybody's looking for today? They're looking for escapism. good to you. Look at him. What you say, Fred?
Man, you know you better take it on the lamb.
You better watch the man. I don't like the hood. What you say, Fred?
I said we better take it on the lamb out of here.
You better watch the man.
But
come over here, brother. Let me tell you. You think we're talking too loud?
Hush that butt.
I ain't got no dust.
I don't have to take it on the land.
Watch that man.
Huh?
Watch that man.
Watch them. Yeah, all right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Coming from some funny places. What you say, bro?
What's happening? Wow.
Trying to get down. Well, you know, look at him. We can't have that.
That's right. Right on. Yeah.
Ain't no alcohol. Man, I don't dig it. What you say, Jeton?
Hey, don't be so mean.
You know I'm clean now.
Thank you.
one thing.
What's that?
Motherfucker who's got the connect. He the one that did Joe.
Oh, no doubt.
Y'all know the co-op took some hits. Joe, Hungry Man, good people, especially Joe. Their passing was for real cold-blooded. I know what you're thinking, so I'm gonna put it out there. I'm responsible. A week or so back, made a move on Omar with Joe's approval. Faggot ain't have hard enough to come at me, so he come at those close to me. Now, I'm doubling the bounty. 100 large for a whiff of that dick suck. 20 to 50 for his head.
What about the connect?
I got that covered. And in light of that fact, I'm gonna take it upon myself to conduct this meet. Slim, I want you to take over Hungry Man's slice of the cake.
Meaning no disrespect, but I ain't cut out to be no CEO.
Cheese then.
No problem, man. Got you covered.
Until we settle up with Omar, I think it's best we suspend these meets. In fact, I ain't really one for meets no how. Anybody got a problem from here on out, bring it to me or sit on that shit. Those of you on the west side who need to re-up, holler at my man Monk. He gonna handle supply over there. On the east side, cheese. One more thing. Price of the brick going up. Tell me more. All right, enough of this shit.
The fuck you mean you sell?
I'm starting to connect.
How much, yo?
10 million.
God damn.
Well, I'd bid if I hit 10 for more than one of y'all. If y'all think it ain't worth that, I stick that shit back in my pocket. Y'all can go back to running that stepped on New York shit.
You don't mind me asking. Why you selling? Mm-hmm. I mean, even from inside of here, you could take a slice with just laying in the cut, nigga.
Ain't gonna be in here long. Case they got against me already falling apart. But the truth is, I'm done with this gangster shit. I've been there, done that.
You're something else other than a gangster.
Businessman. Yeah, told man, I can't get that shit wrapped around my head neither. Anyway, y'all can't get my price up, maybe y'all pull y'all money. But supply only gonna deal with y'all after I make the intro. Then, I'm out.
Everyone on the board is here for one reason and one reason only.
To protect the king.
That is right. To protect the king. Now, he is old and has survived many battles, so he can only move one spot at a time.
So who's got his back if he can only move one spot?
The queen. Now, she is smarter, faster, and stronger than her king. The knight is the horse. Now, he can move two spots forward and one spot to the side. The trusty bishop is his diagonal attack. The rook, he patrols the entire board. He can move as many spaces as he wants as long as it's in the same direction he was moving. Ah, yes, the pawns. They are the front line. They will be casualties.
Crap's boring, man. Kids game. What you reading?
Let me put it to you this way, way you'll understand. Think about it like this. Who's your supplier?
Are you trusting?
Hey, I know you ain't growing that weed you're selling, and so does everybody else in here you're trying to sell it to. So who's your guy? Huh? Hey, your ace in the hole. Trying to protect your king. I like that. Okay. All right, well, then let's call this king Perry. King Perry it is. Now, King Perry has an army, and you're a part of it. But the problem is, you think you're out there doing the king's business, all you're really doing is sacrificing yourself. Like the pawn you truly are.
I ain't like that, B.
It's exactly like that, partner. Now, if you want to keep making the same mistakes for a king who could care less about your ass, out there is the board to do it on. But if you want to learn how to make the right maneuvers, this is where you do it, right here on this board. So what do you want to do? You want to learn how to play?
Play it out, man.
I'll play.
Me too.
Thinking about all Native people and the chronic health conditions that we deal with at such disproportionate levels, you know, compared to other populations, and many of those chronic conditions, diabetes.
Myself a bottle of gin, and then I'm gonna call my buddy on the telephone and say, now listen, you know I work so hard all day long, everything I try to do always turn out wrong. That's why I want to stop by on my way home and say, now let me tell you one more thing. Ain't no harm to have a little taste, but don't lose your cool. Stop messing up the man's place. Ain't no harm. Take a little nip. But don't you fall down and bust your lip. No, no. Everybody on the come on and go with me. I'm gonna tell you one more time what I'm gonna do.
Do you all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe as a race, African Americans, we play the victim?
Hey, man.
I have a dream.
No. I'm just going to leave that as a one-word answer. I'm not even going to jump in deeper than that. No.
Yeah, I'm on the side of absolutely not, and I will leave it there until somebody disagrees.
Yeah, then I'll jump back in. And now I'm gonna step back.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say yes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna say yes.
Give me an example.
See, it's a loaded question just because I'm not going to sit here and say every single African-American sides either on the yes side or on the no side.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes to mainly spark conversation, but also I know you're not talking, you said not personal experiences, but that's all I got to go on. I will say, you know, just based on where I am in life, I've gotten a lot of pressure from African-Americans feeling like, you know, I've gotten to where I am because of white people, or you can't speak, you didn't grow up like I did. Like, I came from the hood, you know, I didn't have the same opportunities and privileges that other people had. And though, you know, I believe that to be true, in today's America, I really do feel like anybody has the opportunity to rise to the occasion. Now, is it easier for certain people over others? Yeah, I mean, let's be real, yes. Like, that's 100% true. But, you know, I just keep hearing, like, systemic oppression, this, that, and the third. Like, yeah, we get it. I know. Like, we all know. Like, we all know. But the opportunities are still there. Will you have to work a little bit harder to get to where you want to be? Absolutely. Because of how you look? Absolutely. I'm a testament of it.
Anybody gonna say nothing?
I want to hear this.
I think it's impossible to accuse us of playing the victim. You're talking about a 400 plus year head start for a particular set of people. You're talking about systematic oppression. That's what I meant by a post-traumatic state. Is we're at this stage in 2020. We're trained to say, yeah, it's unequal, but that's just not okay to me. I don't think we should ever get to the place where we just accept inequality.
Correct.
I'm not encouraging stagnation, so I agree with you. I'm not encouraging throwing in the towel like, yo, it's not fair. That's not what I'm saying at all. But while striving to be your best self, you should never accept inequality. And I think that's what we're being trained to kind of just be like, yo, this is just the way it is, and to no longer call it out. And I'm not even saying we got to go picket, protest. I'm not saying none of that. But at least in conversations like this, if we're not going to set a standard, no standard's going to be set. Nobody else is going to stand it. Nobody else is going to set it. You're talking about, statistically, like factually speaking, at the onset of the 20th century, you're talking about landowners only giving land to specific races. That's generational wealth. Yeah. You're talking about bank loans only being given to specific races.
How can you?
That's generational wealth.
Correct.
So we can't. It's not even like this is ancient history. That's what blows my mind. This is recent history.
But he didn't say that that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was, do we play the victim?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very different. You're aware of the things that have happened, but are you victimized as a result of it?
So,
do you say, this is what I can do with what I have been allotted or whatever my place in life is? Are we playing the victim is the question.
Well, I think we have to define play the victim.
Okay.
I think we are the victim.
Because anybody can be a victim.
I think we are factually a victim.
So all races can be victims.
What are we calling playing the victim?
What do you see that as then?
What do I see what as?
Playing the victim, like when you hear that, like what does that trigger for you?
Play the victim means I'm acting like something is being done to me that's not being done
to me.
Or always
complaining.
That's what I hear.
Always complaining about our history.
That's what I hear when I hear play the victim. Like you're taking the position that something being done to you and nothing's being done to you. That's somebody playing a victim to me.
This is what I hear.
And that's not the case to me.
This is what I hear.
Yeah.
Get over slavery. Stop talking about it. We're all equal now. You should be ahead. You should be further than where you're at. Stop talking about the old days. I'm gonna stop right there.
Yeah,
that's what it triggers in my head.
Mm-hmm. So, to say like we can't. I don't think you can outrule or like just say, hey, some black people aren't playing the victim because everyone uses excuses.
Correct.
And people can be using excuse playing the victim by whatever excuse they may bring. But like you said, like. We weren't given an opportunity basically to build that generational wealth. And without that opportunity, we don't own anything. So we are having to kind of look for employment like at wherever you work. And even you said there's one person at D1 that's black. And we're 15% of the nation. That's not an accurate representation of America. So therefore, we may not be playing a victim, but we're getting hurt. In corporate America or whatever part of life.
That's kind of just statistics.
I'm going to agree with him. You know, I also don't like the term playing the victim because it does sound like you're alluding to something that is not real. Mm-hmm. And I think if we, you know, I'm not dismissing or negating the effects of 400 years of oppression.
Sure.
And, you know, the things that we've seen and been through, I'm not dismissing any of that. But if we cut it all off and we started with a year ago, we are still being victimized by the stuff you have to see on TV. You have African-American boys who at the age of 11 or 12, all they have ever seen were African-American boys being killed on TV. Mm-hmm. That's all they've ever seen. They've not known the life without it because they've watched this happen since they've been old enough to understand. Mm-hmm. They are victims. You can go into a grocery store. You can go into an amusement park. You can go anywhere and be mistreated, and you'll be a victim today. We're not talking about the victimization only of the yesteryears. You can be a victim tomorrow. And I think if we're all honest, we have been in places where you have been the victim.
That's right.
You were either wrongly accused or wrongly criticized, or maybe let's not even make it a negative thing. Looked over for a job unjustly. It's happening. So there's a rationale to the relevancy of still being victimized.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I was, to her point, it's not even like this is ancient history. We're talking about 1960s, 1970s, like the Civil Rights Act was just passed halfway through the 20th century. Like, it's not even hundreds of years ago. Like, there are people alive still, like, you know what I mean, who went through segregation that are still alive. Like, it's not even,
of course.
You know what I mean? It's not even ancient history. So I can never agree that the responsibility is on us to fix the mistakes of others. I could never agree with that. I just can't.
And it doesn't take away, you know, something that I said on the back end of my last answer. At some point, as a family, as a community, you can gather the people you love and say, let's get us out of
this.
Yeah,
correct.
And then you could say, well, we're no longer playing the victim. We took pride and took our own responsibility. And then you can build all that up, and tomorrow you can go somewhere and still be disrespected.
To that point, in my initial answer to you, I said I'm not making an excuse for stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not no excuse to be stagnant.
Yeah.
It's not no excuse to not grind and hustle and get out here and get it. But even if his question is about us as a race and as a culture,
mm-hmm.
and if I get my family together and pull my family up, that's my family.
Exactly.
You feel me?
That's right.
That's not balancing the scales.
That's right.
You know
and
what I'm saying?
It's very interesting. Your point is very, very interesting because I could be an extremely successful black man in today's America and still go somewhere tomorrow and be looked down upon because of what I look like.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, because I remember like Booker T. Washington, like the 1890s, to kind of offset the Jim Crow laws. He was
not
like,
saying I'm that old, right? I'm not trying to give
me
just some
you remember
cool.
him, right?
Yeah. I'm the historian.
He said basically...
Is my grade showing that much, though, for real?
No, I was going to ask you this. So you said basically to offset the Jim Crow laws that were put in place, we had to educate and be entrepreneurs. And you two have both done that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear your experience, because this is, what, 130 years later for him saying, hey, we need to mobilize on our own, get education, and be entrepreneurs. And that will create our own system of wealth. But, I mean, you're only, like you say, you're only one person. It's hard to pull up a whole group.
Of course.
So I kind of like to hear y'all's experience as being entrepreneurs.
You can talk many
options. I was going to let you go first.
Simone owns her own shop, too, so I'd love to hear your
thoughts. Oh, okay.
I'm taking it in.
I'm sorry.
I'm listening right now.
Well, like I said, I was kind of raised in an entrepreneurial family, right? I was always taught, don't work. I'll just be honest, my father, don't work for the white man. That was it, right? You get education, anything you can take, put it towards your own business. Put your own 2 feet on the ground. Save your money. You know, get a hustle. You know, he's showing me all these things to do. So it was always in my mind that I had to work for myself. The only way I'm going to come up is to work for myself. So I was never trained to, you know, you're going to get a great education, then you're going to go get a great job, and then you're going to be successful, then you're going to raise a family. That was out. Go get your own brand. Raise your family. Give your brand to your family. Mm. Let them continue that generational wealth. So that's the way I was taught.
Mm.
And that's the way I got to keep it moving.
Okay.
Rephrase the question that you had specifically.
Basically,
What I was saying is Booker T. Washington said to offset any type of segregation or discrimination or from playing a victim, we need to educate and be entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Has that experience kind of helped you push through, and have you been able to bring others up because of your entrepreneurship?
Okay, so thank you for that question. I definitely believe that entrepreneurship is freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimate freedom. I was writing down a thought just yesterday as I was flying through Chicago that one sign of enslavement is a name change. That when people say that you're something that you're not. So if I was to like go and address the same idea with biblical characters, we could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Mm-hmm.
That was not their name.
Yes.
It was their name that they were given in enslavement. And I can just imagine how they were in a room together, and you know, one of them yelled, "Hey, Shadrach, dude, that is not my name. I'm Toby." you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And feel like we have a responsibility to know who we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have a responsibility to do our due diligence to make our name great. That somebody can walk around and call you a liar. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
That's not who you are. Somebody can walk around and call you a thief. Is that who you are? That's the name that the enslavement has given you, right? And so I think that the only way that we can exercise true freedom is in ownership of our stuff, of ourselves, of our actions, of the things that we create, that we can be makers. I think that this is the time for all hustlers to unite, you know, that we all can make whatever we want to be a part of. We no longer have to sit back and say, oh, it's because of what you did to me. Listen, I was molested as a child. So if we want to go back and talk about victimization of the things that people have done to us, we can do that. Or we can rise above it and we can say, well, this is who I am now. This is what I'm going to do. When I started my business, I could not bake, not even out of a box. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any credit. I didn't have any experience in the business. Nobody was going to give me a loan for anything. I was losing the house that the very bakery exists in right now, 11 years later. Because when you put your mind, this is what I was saying earlier, we can be focused on what happened for us instead of what has happened to us. I believe that it is that blood running through my veins that had things taken from her. You know, it is that blood running through my veins that said, no, you can't come in here. It's that blood that is running through my veins that made my great-grandfather one of the first to be able to sing where he sang. And those are the things that I'm using today to get me from where I am to where it is that I want to be. And it's those things that I'm giving to my children and saying, this is what you have. We're not talking about what we're not. We're talking about what we are.
Mm.
And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what we are, what are we doing right as a culture that's setting up our children to have wealth? What are we doing right as a culture to where our children's children will know our names? Are we doing things right as a culture to change the narrative of our finances of our children?
I can only answer that as an individual and then see what we and my wife also try to do and spread, right? You know, we're all about giving back. We're all about showing and proving. You know, I want to be that beacon that the young brother say, you know what? I want to do what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out and get my own wealth. I want to start my own business. And if I wasn't there, maybe he didn't see me. Maybe they never came to my restaurant. Maybe it's just me, you know, but when you're there, we're going to teach you. We're going to give you tools. We're going to teach you about customer service. We're going to teach you how to run a restaurant because that's what we have to do. It's my duty. I have to teach. And again, I can only speak about me. I can't save the world. Yeah. But I can save the people that watch me. I can save the people that touch me. I can save the people that work for me. I do my best, right? You know, so, you know, I just look at it as you have to be that beacon, right? You got to be that shining light to change everything around you. You know, be that leading example.
But I don't think that's anything new under the sun, what you're saying.
No, it's not new.
I think that's what this community has been. You know, it has been a community of people who say, I'll teach you how to do this.
What community are you talking about?
The black community. Has gone, I have plenty of examples in my life of people who stuck their foot in the door so that I could pass through.
That's not always out the way we do things, though. You know.
Quiet Friday here. Yesterday, Reba brought up a mobile community center, and that's a good idea. So I want to combine that with something we talked about on here before, but now we need to bring it in reality. A 20-hour house building camp or retreat or whatever you want to call it, where we take people who have no carpentry experience, no house building experience, and we basically teach them how to build a tiny house, the fundamentals, hands-on fundamentals within a 20-hour period of time. Now, and based on the book, the first 20 hours, okay, at the end of that 20 hours, you're not going to be a master home builder by any stretch of the imagination. However, in those first 20 hours, you'll learn the fundamentals enough where, hands-on fundamentals where you will have enough basic knowledge and a teeny bit of experience and within that 20 hours to self-correct. Now, that's just, and it, anything we've learned, you know, we've learned the fundamentals of it in 20 or more hours. Like when we learn how to walk. Okay, we, you know, learn how to pull ourselves up, how to crawl, know how to stand up, take a step, fall down, take another step, fall down, take 2, 3, 4, 5 steps, fall down, you know, fall off chairs, you know, all kind of stuff, fall out of the bed. But so... that first 20 hours, the first 20 hours of learning how to read, the first 20 hours learn how to write, the first 20 hours to learn how to, you know, ride a bicycle, you learn enough within that first 20 hours of anything where you can self-correct, where you don't need any outside assistance, okay? You can get outside. Well, you know, depends on what it is. But so that's what this is. First 20 hours to give you the basic fundamentals of, you know, what to do and how to correct yourself, all right? And then within that, we're also going to throw in a bonus of what I call seven-figure school. A lot of times people, well, you have people out here that owe car debts, mortgage payments, student loans, trying to pay rent, try to pay the light bill. And seven-figure school is basically designed to help you think bigger and also realize that every problem that you got dealing with personal finance is essentially a math problem. It's a word problem. If you reduce your economic problem or personal finance problem down to a word problem, like they did in 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade. If you reduce it down to a word problem, you can figure it out. Figure it out on paper, then you follow the steps in action, in reality. So 7-figure school just gets you thinking differently gets you thinking bigger also. A lot of times we have a big problem, but we're thinking too small to solve that problem. So 7-figure school gets you, and I'll give you an example. Like you, and I'm not going to play it today, but the solar cabin with Lamar Alexander. Okay, he built a cabin for $5,000. A solar cabin, well, he built the cabin. He solarized it for another three, so a total of $5,000. So he could easily sell that cabin for let's say $20,000. Okay, $20,000. So if we take 7 figures on the low end, which is $1 million, okay, how many cabins would Lamar Alexander or you, How many $20,000 cabins would you have to build to gross 7 figures or $1 million? Okay. And that number is 50. All right. And if you did that, now there's one guy that we know of that we've mentioned on here, Randy Jones. Randy Jones does 3 to 5 a day at about $20,000. All right, so let's just put the average at 4. So he does 4 a day on average. You know, let's go to the lowest amount. Bare minimum 3 a day. So 3 times $20,000. That's $60,000 in a day. That's 3 tiny houses that his crew builds on the low end in a day. 5 days a week, that's $300,000. And in a month, taking weekends off, he's gross $1.2 million. All right. That's just in a month. For over $14 million for the year. So, and that's just... And you retail it for another price. So we're throwing that in there as well. Because that, you know, some people, if you want to solve, a lot of problems could be, you can take a, and the $20,000 house really isn't a big figure. It's just, as one of the things we'll tell you is, you know, wash, rinse, repeat. So that's what Randy Jones does. You know, he has a crew. He's got a total of 5 crews, because sometimes we do 5 a day. And he's got typically seven people on a house. A crew of 7, he can build a tiny house within an 8-hour period of time. All right. He's got a total of 5 crews, depending on the orders, and they, you know, a lot of times they crank out 5, at least once a week, if not twice a week, one or two of those days, they're cranking out 5 tiny houses in a day, times 20, so for each one. So it's, now some people just might stop at one. If one a month is good for you, one every 3 months is good for you, one a year is good for you, so be it. But we're putting out that we're putting this in, we're include, if you want to enroll in the 7-figure school, all you'll be doing is the same thing, but it's what do you need to do where you can produce so many per day or per week or per month. So you, or within a year, to reach that 7-figure goal. All right. Let's see. That's all I got on my end for today. It's Friday already. And I'm working on a Faith Street project myself. Actually, I've been working on one for the last 3 years. But anyway, let's see. 309 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning, LA. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm enjoying listening to you give your demonstration on how to have a 7-figure day. You know, even if it didn't, you know, pertain to people doing 50 of them and trying to pull $1 million. And equity in your life, but also think about the lives that you could be changing and where that money could be coming from that's actually putting the equity in your life. Reason one, the social equity helping you get it. You know, I love your shows, the way you push social equity as being, you know, the same as a commodity, as a Swiss franc or a Deutsche Mark.
Right.
You've had many, many shows, and I get educated every time, so I just appreciate you for that. And
Chris, now you mentioned something that Tex, you can do, all right, frame of a building for $1,000. Now, tell us, if you, I mean, this for at least an audio, if you can paint a picture for us in this audio format of the frame, if you can give us a visual of, you know, the parts of the frame.
Yeah, definitely. You're going to get the studs for all four of your walls, and you're going to get a divider wall for your bathroom area, and you're going to get all the trusses that go on top of it, and you'll have the track that you attach the studs to, but it's all ABC 123, and it's all labeled and easy. As far as the assembly, you're basically putting together a puzzle that you don't have to cut. All you have to do is lay the pieces out and put screws in, and then put it up and put screws in and put sheeting on it and put screws in, and now you've got it covered. Now, anything you want to put on it, you can put on it. You can do any kind of roof.
Would the frame include any... Would the frame include, door space? Do we have to cut that out, or windows as well?
It'll have the pieces for you to just put them in place, and your window will be there, and your door as well.
Okay. Oh, and what the dimensions?
That's working on 120 square feet.
120 square feet, okay. All right.
And that includes what it is in the 120 square feet, it gives you a little porch.
Okay.
So that way you have something that's shaded you can sit outside under.
All right, $1,000, right?
$1,000.
Oh,
now that doesn't include shipping.
How much for the ship? That includes shipping.
The shipping depends on where you're getting the ship to.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, that does not include shipping. Unless you pick me up right now on my route of wanting to drop off 100 houses to. In 50 cities.
All right.
My goal is to do 2 houses.
Now, what are those potential pickup space spots?
Well, here's what I'm looking at. Louisiana is where I'm going to pick up first load of material here. And I'm not sure if I can get all of the material on the trailer that I found. I think I might need a little bigger trailer. So I'm looking for a sponsor on the trailer. I did find a 44-foot trailer, though, yesterday, that a friend of mine owned a car dealership.
Okay.
And he got a job offer for $75 an hour, and he took it, and now he offered me his big, long car hauler that's a nice piece of equipment. So somebody could buy that. I don't have the money to buy it, but it was brought up last night at 11 o'clock. So now as far as me, you know, I plan on leaving somewhere around Lafayette there, and I would like to see communities come together going down the Gulf Coast for me to hit Miami, Orlando area, turn and come up the Florida, the ocean side there, and go up to North Carolina. I expect to be able to hit the 50 cities and deliver the 100 houses, and it wouldn't hurt my feelings if I didn't get out of Florida.
Okay.
So it comes down, I mean, we've got 19,500 municipalities, and I'm wanting to hit 50 cities. So, you know, if we went to looking at how many churches or thing, you know, different organizations that is, we're talking hundreds of thousands.
Right.
So, you know, I'm just asking for a few here to step up and say, yes, we'll take a package.
You know, the total build cost is $10,000 for one of these things. You can completely finish it out, done, and have every component to it, not just the frames. I ran the cost comparison last night or yesterday with the material. For me to go pick up the 100 frames, that's my cost. So that's where I'm at. I don't think people can say no to that. I mean, if you want something that's 400 square feet, you're talking $4,000. You're not going to go out to Lowe's and buy that same amount of material that you're still going to have to build. But you're going to get something that is very versatile, and you can change the layout at any time you want to, because it's an erector set. If you want to take it apart, take it apart. If you want to add on to it, add on to it. So they can start with any size, and they can grow. Just know that something needs to happen, and this ignition's about to start, and I'm looking forward to seeing the press release before it actually goes out to the public here. But, you know, I hope to have every news agency standing over the bridges following the truck and trailer doing what it's doing, because it's bringing a solution to your city, and all you got to do is come out and do your part.
Okay. Matter of fact, I'm about to see. I got to go to my my Pinterest account, and there's okay, let me see. I'm gonna put it's called the Rental Housing Price Pyramid. And let's see. Let me, this is the right one. Hopefully I can transfer it correctly. Okay. Yeah, I'm posting some our Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV. DIY Housing TV. If you go to that page right now, and I just posted Rental Housing Price Pyramid. Now, this is for the 1980s. And this is what I go. Now, this is what I'm going to post another pyramid here in a moment. But if you get to that page on our Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV, and I just posted this, it's titled Rental Housing Price Pyramid. Now, this is based on the 1980s, and this is what I go by today. I'm gonna give you a more updated one in a moment, but let's go through this fundamental one that I go today. It gives you you see a pyramid there, and you see the highest demand is at the bottom of the pyramid, and there's a book titled Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid by C.K. Prahala, but that's a different story there. But at the bottom of the pyramid, you have the highest demand. And you see basic bread and butter homes. And the basic bread and butter homes are priced under $50,000. And then intermediate homes are ranging from $50,000 to $74,999. Higher price homes are $75,000 to $99,000. Luxury homes are priced at $100,000 to $200,000, and elite houses are priced at $200,000 or more. Now, this is based on 1980s. Now, if you look at the rents, okay, Basic Bread and Brother Holmes, okay, that's 48.5%, almost 50% of homes in demand are the basic bread and butter homes, and that's priced under $49,999. Okay. Now, let's see. I'm about to put something else. All right, just stay tuned to that. I'll let another post on that same, our Facebook page here, which is DIY Housing TV. And all right. Now, what I just posted. Okay, all right, what I just posted on monthly payments. Now, this is based on 1980, but this is what I go by still today. I'll give you an updated version here in a moment. But I still go for this regardless of the updated version I'm going to give you. But I figure you need to see both. Monthly payments. The biggest demand, and this is number five, bread and butter houses. People that can pay $249 per month and below. That's the sweet spot. You'll get more people that I call them hamburger houses. You'll get the biggest demand of people that their budget allows them to pay $249 and below. The intermediate people, $250 to $374 a month. Going up to luxury, if you're paying $500 to $899 a month, that's luxury. Because you got people in some cities that's what they pay for a room, or even more than that. And then elite monthly payments are $900 or more a month. Now, once again, that's what I go by here in 2023, the price pyramid that I just showed you. Now, I'm about to put another one up that's updated. And let me see. Let me post it. I'm going to give you an updated price pyramid, which you need to take note of. And you might use it yourself. I don't use it. I go by what's in the 19. I go, matter of fact, sometimes I even go back to 1938. In 1938, you can buy a $5,000 house. You can still buy a $5,000 house now if you know how to build one in a rural area. But anyway, so let me post this new pyramid that I want you to look at, a price pyramid. And you might want to go with this one more so than mine, which I just posted. Okay, now this. Okay, the one I just posted on my Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV. You see another price pyramid at the bottom. Once again, the biggest demand is at the bottom of the pyramid. And basic bread and butter homes are $100,000 or less. Intermediate homes cost $100,000 to $200,000. Luxury homes are $500,000 to $1 million. And elite homes are $1 million or more. All right. The reason why I stick with the 1980s pyramid, because the elite homes there cost $200,000. And you have a lot of people these days that are living in elite priced houses, but you're struggling. Where if you like I said, it bed and brother, I call them Walmart houses. I like to deal with Walmart price houses, Dollar General price houses, and that range. That's where you're not hamburger houses, McDonald's houses, where the general serving the most amount of people that they are. Walmart makes this money. You notice Walmart doesn't have any sales. They don't have sales because they price them. So they don't. Now there's some place where you can go buy stuff that is less expensive than Walmart, but overall, Walmart doesn't need to hold any sales because they're priced just right. They price it towards the bread and butter market. Dollar General prices things for the basic bread and butter market, which has the highest demand in the population. Whereas people that might shop at elite places, you might not find a Walmart or whatever. But and then some people are living in elite metro areas, elite housing markets, when their budget is more of a bread and butter budget. So I like to go to bread and butter markets, which for the most part are the rural areas around the United States or even globally. And then build, because you can buy a bread and butter house, but I think it's easier to build a bread and butter house. And once again, the one I go by, because I've given you two pyramids here, under $50,000. And mortgage payments or monthly payments, $250,000 and below. At the extreme, no more than $500 a month. At the extreme, no more than $500. But if you, anyway, that's what works for me. Okay. Anyway, but hopefully you can get some the two charts, two pyramids that I put up. And then some people, they're, if you look at the elite housing market, now those are homes priced $200,000 and below. Only 1.7% of the market can afford those homes. So that's why you have a lot of foreclosures. We'll do a whole podcast on that one day. All right, well, any other trending topics that you guys want to put out here for today? Speak your piece now.
I don't want to be any other trending topics, but...
Excuse me? Oh, okay.
No. I said I haven't looked at any trending topics, but I'm definitely, I really enjoyed looking at this pyramid, seeing what it was in 1980 and seeing what it is today. But if we could bring the pricing to 1980s, who's paying attention?
Now, with the houses that you're talking about, because you said, $10,000 to $20,000? That fits that.
Yep.
That fits that. Okay. Now, if people want some bells and whistles, that's going to increase the price. What would you say, Chris?
I'm sorry. I said it fits it and cuts it in half, if you're looking at a $50,000
right.
thing, plus half again on the move. So, you can save 150% of the cost.
Right.
Anytime you do that, what is that called? It's called equity. Equity is something you can borrow against. So, you know, this is the way society works, right? But the thing is what if you never had to borrow against it? And you had it, and it was yours, and it would always be yours. These are, you know, the little key tricks of that social equity that you talk and educate mm-hmm. so much on. Because everybody knows somebody. And you don't have to know what you're doing to give someone a hand and learn something you don't know what you're doing. So then you can know what you're doing. You might enjoy it because the one thing about it is every time you drive by it, you can say, I built that. I did that. And be proud of it. And the people that you're helping and they're involved in the build, guess what? They're proud of it too because they put their love into it, and now they love it as much as you love it, even though you still might own it.
Right.
It's the difference. They didn't have something to love. And, you know, I want to give that opportunity. That's the whole reason that when I sent out the price on what I would – give a frame up for, that is not about making money, people. Anybody that's listening, you ought to understand that is wholesale pricing I'm offering because this isn't about trying to majorly profit from getting these frames in your hands. It's what's going to happen after these frames are in your hands. It's the thousands of frames that are going to be coming. That these frames are going to be produced in one day. They will be ready for loading and shipping. So in one day, these 100 frames are going to be made in Louisiana. We got 300, you know, what we got left now? We ain't got 300. We got 200 and roughly about 203 days left in the year. So, you know,
that'll go by quick before you know it. Before you know it, it'll be the holidays again.
Right, because we had 365, right? So we've already lost a third.
Yep.
And, I don't feel we've lost it. What we've done is we prepared for it. So, you know, the more we've been discussing and educating and learning, you know, when I put it down, this is the size, this is how the components we need, this is everything. Where's my number? I came up with a number that I think every church in Florida can afford to buy one of these and set it in their parking lot so that people can see it.
Yep.
Whether they close it up or make it a sleeping shelter, just show it because it'll never rust. It'll never change. It'll still stand there whether you ever put a roof or siding on it. It'll just be a frame standing there. But the sight of it and know that it was built in an hour or so is supposed to give you the clue that this is where all you got to do is show up and it will go up. It's that simple. And then we enjoy each other. We have food. We can eat beforehand. We can eat during. The thing is, more than likely, while you're doing something, you're not needing to stop and do it because you're actually enjoying what you're doing because you're doing it so quickly. You're like, I can't believe how fast I'm building these things. Man, look at them. Look at them just stack up over there. And that when you see these people do it, I've seen it in all age groups too. Here I had a 56-year-old man and I had a 26-year-old man. Never worked together. Took them and never touched this material before. And right in a trailer park, the old trailer off with the frame. So it was just a frame standing there. And so these guys didn't have anything to do with that. That was already done. But what they did is they built all the walls and all the trusses to replace that trailer right there in the trailer park. So the frame was still good. It was kind of warped the way they had it, so we straightened it out and got it level. But once we put the floor in and put it in, we have a mobile home that don't burn. Now, the other one's all warped and all this because of what the weather's done to it. Wood warps. That's what it does. It moves. But these guys, in one day, they built all the wall panels and all of the trusses for that house, and it was just the two of them. To me, that's amazing. Okay. In your front yard.
Right. So, yeah, we like to start having visual of these eventually. Well, we'll start with once a week and see how many days a week can we do live stream builds. So I've got two locations here where I'm at. And then you got Anthony Whitfield up in Orlando or Miami, wherever he's at. He's between those two cities, I think. So
I met someone last night that has 4 acres that he didn't know what he was going to do with in Florida, and we're going to be able to do a project on that. So I met him last night.
We didn't hear you, Chris.
You didn't hear me?
The mic went out.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I've got 4 acres. I met a man last night that he was just having a discussion last week with someone that I was in this discussion, that I was on a podcast with Inez last night, and this guy, his name is Hunter, and he said he had 4 acres in Florida and he didn't know what to do with it, and here I think this is going to be another project we can work with. So he seemed very good about it, because after the podcast was over at 1 a.m., we stayed on the phone and talked for another 30 minutes.
Okay.
So.
All right. There's one guy that you introduced me to. He's on Clubhouse. Farmer. He's got 100 acres down in Belize, but last time I heard him on Park, Clubhouse, because I haven't been in his rooms in a while. He had 100 acres down there, but he's by himself, so it looks like he needs some help down that way. That's a lot of quite a bit of land. 100 acres.
He wants to build a research center so that they can do research and development on products for what's being grown there in the country and on the farm, and. So he wants a 1 acre research and development place. And I reached out and introduced him to someone. And he has like 75 connections in Belize. Well, he reached out to 8 of them. And 6 of them reached back. So there's actually people that's interested in what it is that he's doing. I just haven't had a chance to have a conversation with him, because he said he was busy, you know, doing what he's doing, but he was going to take a little break from Clubhouse just so he could do what he was doing. So I haven't really had a discussion with him. So I need to contact him offline here, and see how he's doing, and let him know that what he's trying to make have happen, the doors are opening up for him to be able to do that. And I would love to see that happen, because he did offer up like 10 acres of his 100 acres to do a retreat for people.
Right.
So they can come to the mountains and enjoy Belize, you know, enjoy paradise and learn about the products that are being made on the farm and all this other stuff, and even make some of the products if they want. So he did offer that up to us. So we do have something that's out of the country that we can develop as well.
All right. Well, I imagine Belize, that's part of Central America. That's, I imagine you can probably drive there from the United States. I'm guessing.
You can drive all the way to the
I know you can drive from the United States to Mexico.
You can drive all the way to Belize, all the way to his farm. You can drive.
Okay, good, good. That would be an interesting drive, too. As I imagine, there are areas where there is no one around.
There is.
So. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up for today. It's Friday, so that's on Monday.